हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Did we finish this page 13?
I think we were on page 13.
On page 13.
Yeah. I think we just read the verses, right?
Okay.
3 to 18, I think. Then.
Oh, okay. So we're down to verses 6 to 9?
Just about Prabhupada writing his purpose. I'm not sure if you read that.
Okay. We'll just start at the beginning there. The Lord opens the description of soul's entanglement by identifying himself as the origin of all living entities. It is Krishna who impregnates the total material substance, Brahman, with the living beings and makes possible the births of all species of life. Thus he is the seed-giving father. Because whatever generally one considers one's origin, that's what one becomes attached to. Like that. So the first thing to be established is Krishna is the source of the living entities. Right? So then there's that natural element that then living entities are going to start looking in a different way. See, because the problem is not the principle of attachment. The problem is illusion. Right? Because the soul, being Prakriti, has to be attached. It's just its nature. But the problem is the attachment is not to Krishna. It's not a transcendental attachment. Right? It's not a transcendental situation. So if the soul is not transcendentally situated, then the soul actually can't be very satisfied. Right? It's obvious. Right? Like that. You know, we have to understand, people being happy in the world in general, that's advertisement. That's marketing. In reality, then everybody's miserable. You know, they get their moments, but still, you know, we're talking moments, not even minutes or hours. Okay. When the living entity comes into contact with the material nature, he becomes conditioned by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, the living entity, because he is transcendental, has nothing to do with this material nature. Still, because he has become conditioned by the material world, he is acting under the spell of the three modes of material nature. Because living entities have different kinds of bodies, in terms of the different aspects of nature, they are induced to act according to that nature. This is the cause of the varieties of happiness and distress. We have to remember, this is a reflection. Right? So the reflection only moves according to the original nature. Right? But at the same time is because we are thinking, you do some movement in a mirror, okay? What's the actual cause of the movement? The mirror?
No.
No, us, right? But at the same time is, there is some mechanics how the mirror works. Though its function is only reflecting what's originally there. You understand? So the modes of nature are simply reflecting, right, the internal potency. So the internal potency is the sum of its sundini, ladini potencies. Right? And so that's what's reflected here. But when it's reflected here, then we call it goodness, passion, and ignorance. Does that make sense? Yes.
So we can cultivate these modes within ourselves, or tune into them, or, develop mode of goodness.
But what do you mean by cultivate? What's the purpose?
I mean animals can't. They are, a cow is in the mode of goodness.
You mean cultivate what mode you'll be in?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. That's the idea. So he becomes in contact, then he becomes conditioned. Mm. So according to his desire, because the living entity, the human has free will.
Yeah.
So he could desire something that's actually not necessarily as prominent or the specific prominence in his combination of the modes at present. Mm. So it'll start to adjust it slowly. But generally you'll see it'll be a very slow change. It's not going to be a quick change like that, you know. So, the guy goes from golf to skiing, right? Does that make sense? He doesn't go from golf to, extreme, cycle riding, stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? It'll be a slow change. Is that, so then... Yeah. So this reflection then is simply the mechanics of how it's carried out, right? Sandini is the existence potency, right? Here then, mode of ignorance is the existence potency. Because one is in the material world because of ignorance. If you're not in ignorance, you're not in the material world, right? You may be situated in the inferior Brahman, but it's not material to you. Because material means not connected to the Lord. Right, and it means action happens, but here the original is carried out by the chit potency, but here it's carried out by the mode of passion. Right, the reflection is the mode of passion. Right, that makes sense. Ladini will be the pleasure potency. Right, so here then mode of goodness will generate. Does that make sense? So that's the point: is that they're only existing because they're reflections of the original. But we take them as substance, so therefore we invest our consciousness in them. So we become conditioned by them. So if we change our vision to see everything in connection to Krishna, then we're dealing with the Sandini, Sambit, and Ladini potencies. You understand?
Right, so they're both existing here. It's a question of which one I tune to. If I tune to the reflection...
Yes, it means it's just like when we're dealing with the original cause and the formal cause. So it's Krishna, it's called Krishna and his potency. So what energy are we dealing with here? The internal or external?
External.
Sure?
No. Internal.
Internal, right? Okay. Now when we deal with the operative cause, and the material cause, then we're dealing with the external potency. That's where it's manifest. You can see it. So in between those two, that's where the reflection is. Does that make sense?
Between them.
Between in the you have the original cause and the formal cause,
okay.
Right? And that's internal potency. And then the operative cause and the material cause, that's dealing in your external potency. So between those two, that's where the reflection is happening. Does that make sense? You have the tree on the bank and you have the tree in the water. So that point where the bank meets the water and the water meets the bank, that's the point between the two. Right? So that's where the reflection starts. You understand? So reflection starts there. So the quality is there, the potency, the internal potency is there. Those are reflected to the material world. Right? So you're still hankering for that quality, but you think it's the material energy that you're hankering for. And you therefore take the forms and activities of the formal cause. But, it's in the material energy. So you think it's the material energy that's actually doing the work. Does that make sense?
So when you connect to Krishna, You're actually dealing with
the internal potency. Though the material energy is carried out by the modes, but because you're seeing the original, you're getting the benefit of the original. You're not being entangled by the...
We're dealing with the modes, but we're not getting entangled because...
It's like you're taking the flower and offering it to Krishna. So what's the flower made out of? Internal potency or external?
External.
But you're using it according to the original internal potency. So what effect is there? Do you get entangled by the material modes or do you get free? Yes, because you're working under the internal potency. So in other words, you have these two going at once. This is Tathasta Shakti. Right? This is why it's confusing, because material world is only material. You don't see anything else. Spiritual world is only spiritual. Tathasta means you can see both at once. You understand? So you've made this choice to come this side, so you have to, by seeing both, you have to see both to make the choice to go to the other side. You understand? So the two of them are there. So you're going to have the actual working, but it's going to be happening in the mirror, right? Like the mirror is, you know, glass which is made out of, you know, silica and all that, and there's some back reflective thing of the silver and all these things and the light particles and all that mechanically makes the mirror work. But is that what makes your arm work? No. And does the arm actually have anything to do with all that silica and all that? No. But so the one works on its mechanics, the other one works on that. But the one is the reflection of the mechanics of the original. You understand? So what's happening is then the living entity has nothing to do with the material energy because he identifies with it, therefore he's caught up in it. But if one understands that one doesn't have to work under the material energy, one may be working with the external energy, but you're working under the internal potency. Does that make sense? See, you have the situation you're in, and then there's what you do with it, right? Right. You have the kitchen, and then there's what you do with it, right? So the two aren't necessarily connected, right? So, I mean, how you say, there is a connection, but it's not that the one necessarily governs what you'll do with it. You're in a nice kitchen, right? And you may do something not nice in it, right? And so, yes. You know, you can cook for Krishna or not. Right? And let's say we have an inferior kitchen. It also doesn't define whether you'll cook for Krishna or not. Right? So, therefore, situated in the Tathasta, we can see the two of them. Right? So, you could be working with the spiritual energy or with the material energy, depending upon the consciousness. Right? So, the devotee may be situated in the material world, but his consciousness is situated in the spiritual world, so he gets that effect. Right? Though you're dealing with an inferior energy, so it's a bit of an annoyance, but you know what I'm saying? Or you could be, this is, so that part we all basically buy. Right? So basically, three out of four options we buy easily. In the spiritual world, doing spiritual activities. In the material world, doing material activities. In the material world, doing spiritual activities. The one we don't buy is in the spiritual world, doing material activities. That we say can't happen. But then if we do that, that means we're deifying the spiritual. Why can't it? It's a reflection of it. You know what I'm saying? Is Aristasura in the spiritual world? Yeah. By situation, yes. But by consciousness, where is he? In the material world. So this is the point. So it's your consciousness, how you deal with it, it situates you either on the transcendental platform or not. Does that make sense? So this is the point, is that living entity has nothing to do with the material world. That doesn't mean you don't interact with it. But they'll say, no, but we have to be practical. We're interacting with the material world. Of course we're interacting with the material world. What else are you going to work with? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? If you're in Joe's Diner, you know, the pots are that are Joe's pots. You know, you don't have other pots, but you can cook for Krishna. You understand? So it's not magical. You know, some mystic thing that how did it happen? It just poof, you know, like this. No. It's you're here. You work with what's here. But you work in the consciousness, so you get the benefit of working. It's in the spiritual world. Because we have to remember, the reflection is whose? Yeah, it means it's Krishna and his internal posing. That's what's reflected. But we think that reflection is us. That's the problem. Right? You know, Krishna's there dancing with all the girls, right? And so we look at it, and whose face do we see there? Ours, not Krishna's. If we saw Krishna's, there wouldn't be a problem. You understand? So that's what's going on. So living entity doesn't have it. So it, once we become convinced that this is what's going on, then it's easy to, I mean, it's not easy. Then it becomes focused to practice giving up attachment to the material energy. Because what we're attached to is not the material energy. Right? You look in the mirror and you think, that looks great. I want that. I want to interact with that. What are you actually attached to? The mirror? You love silica, right? It's such a great thing, you know? Melted glasses, I mean, melted sand has always been your, you know, perfection of what you want, right? No, you want what it's reflecting. So what we want is the spiritual, right? How long does anybody want to live?
Forever.
Okay. Does anybody want to be unhappy, or would they rather be happy? Happy. And for how long? Eternally. Okay. So, what is that? The material world or the spiritual world? So that's the point. What we want is the spiritual world, but we think we're going to get it by, you know, so we want the real fruits and flowers. So, but we're going up to the reflection, and we're trying to get the fruits and flowers there. You know? And somehow or another, there's ways that by being absorbed, we think, hey, I got it. But can you get anything from it? That's the point. It appears. But so what is it actually that you're getting from it? There's an experience there. What is that experience coming from?
You're getting the qualities from Krishna.
Yes. In other words, when you look at the reflection, you're actually looking indirectly at the original. So the original moves, it does all that, because that's where it's happening. So that experience is coming because you're actually in contact indirectly with the Lord and His internal potency. But because of illusion, you think it's the mirror itself that's doing that, and you are the mirror. You understand? So that's where the problem comes. So it's only because of the contact with Krishna that an experience is gained. Right? But the problem the illusion is we think that mirror is real and we are the mirror. But we have nothing to do with the mirror. Right? Does that make sense? So all this is trying to describe all this from different angles. So this is different ways to convince us. Now, before, did Krishna saying, okay, all potencies are coming from me. Okay, but that's establishing him as what?
The origin,
the supreme, right? So we're dealing here with tattva, right? The position of everything, the knowledge of everything's position. So now here again, he's saying he's the origin of all living entities. So you are establishing the position of the Lord. But what's the difference between this description and the previous ones? Because he says this one's superior. He says here again. So it's the same thing. But he's saying something that is more. Prabhupada says, here there's more. Yes. About the personal relationship. Right? In other words, here's the higher level. Before you're learning the mechanics of the material world. But now the higher level is there is These mechanics are based on your relationship with the Supreme Lord. Right? Because we're into mechanics here. Okay, I go to do my job, I get my money, I go down to the shop, I get the thing that I want. Now that I have that, now my life is perfect, I will enjoy. Right? Does that make sense? But notice in the equation, there's never the element of I am enjoy. You know what I'm saying? Because even if you say, I am enjoying, what are you referring to? I'm telling you, I am enjoying. Am I enjoying while I'm telling you?
No.
No, I'm telling you what I was enjoying. So it's already past, so it's already ignorance. You know, or we get together and say, hey, this is going to be great.
Future.
That's future. So, present is only experienced if you don't notice it. As soon as you notice it, it moves into the past or into the future. Because an experience is not observed. An experience is experiential.
Do we move constantly to past and future because of our sense of control?
Do we always move this future and past as a sense of control? That would be under... There's a ladder out there just going like into nowhere. A very tall ladder. Nobody here would know that. Okay. Is that the ladder to heaven? what Ravana didn't know, right? He went to all that trouble, right? He just needed a bamboo ladder. Okay. Yeah, and then there's only one language, right? Bengali. You don't have all that babble business. Right? So. Question. Now, they're making the tower to heaven, right? And then, because they're not supposed to be doing that, that's no way to get there, then they all start speaking different languages so they can't understand each other. So, but according to the Old Testament, they would have been speaking Hebrew to begin with, right? Because that's the Lord's language. So that means, does that mean that the people who continued speaking Hebrew weren't there building that tower?
So no, maybe there was only partial. The Lord just gave them part of that language and everybody else got their own language and then they just had that language. Like only a small group remained with this language and all others got their own language.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So just what was left was the...
Yeah.
At the same time, maybe those were all the workers, right? All the hired, Palestinians and stuff like that. So they ended up with a different language. Okay. Okay. So does that make sense? So conditioning means you think this is the way it is. Just like you have an elephant when it's small, right? When it's small, you have a good rope. It can't break the rope. But because it's been tied with that rope its whole life, even though it's huge, it could easily break the rope. It's conditioned and think, I can't break this rope. So you're just putting the rope, then that's it. You don't have to do anything else. You understand? That's conditioning. Does that make sense? Okay. And so, yeah. So one is induced to act because that's the mechanics of the place. You're going to do something. You have any identity, that's going to be in ignorance. Any action will be in passion, right? Any result will be in goodness, you know, produced by that mode. Does that make sense? It doesn't mean that the situation that it produces is in goodness, but it's goodness that produces it. Verses 6 to 9 describe how the modes bind the conditioned soul. The mode of goodness is purer than the others. It is illuminating. It frees one from all sinful reactions and gives a sense of knowledge and happiness. Here, knowledge refers to understanding the real nature of a material object. And happiness means tranquility of the senses and body. Right? So Does that make sense? So here, the practical knowledge means, you know, that you seeing the item actually for what it is. Right? So that means you see yourself, see the situation, all these things like that. And that happiness, that means the satisfaction or the peace that one's doing things properly. Not that it's, how you say, the happiness is gained from removing the material dissatisfaction. That makes sense. You know, you're hungry, so that's a material problem. By eating, you remove the hunger, right? Because as long as you're removing hunger, then you say that you're eating and you say that there's a good experience, right? As you become full, you're not removing hunger anymore, so there's no taste, right? Does that make sense? But because we want that taste, then we continue trying to eat, trying to gain something from it. But we're not removing any problem. Therefore, there's no taste. Right? So satisfaction means that you're not involved in that process. Satisfaction means whatever your situation, you know, like that, you're comfortable with that. That's good. So this satisfaction is this, you're comfortable in the situation because you're connecting it to Krishna. So here it's different because there is no material knowledge and no material satisfaction, right? You know, what's in a mirror, right? There actually isn't anything there. It's only a reflection of reality. So there isn't actually any movement, right? Does the glass itself actually move? Does it smell? Does it taste? Does it have an experience? No, it's just there. It's just able to reflect what's real. Does that make sense? Yeah. But one, yeah, always has to understand that one therefore doesn't now swing to the other side and nothing here is real. What's not real is that we think it's not connected to the Lord. So it exists. Right? Just like the reflection exists. Right? Because it's a reflection doesn't mean it doesn't exist. What doesn't exist is we think the reflection is reality. But the reflection is actually there. You know what I'm saying?
So in this case, illusion wouldn't be dealing with the material energy, but would be thinking it is not connected to it.
Yes. Yeah. Interacting with the material energy isn't illusion. That's just situated in an inferior place. That's all.
So the mirror actually is our consciousness.
Yes, because otherwise then we would be dealing with Krishna's inferior potency. But we think the dead matter, this inferior potency, is what's giving you the experience and all that. It's actually coming from the Lord and His internal potency. But it's reflected onto this, so therefore. But at the same time, as the Lord is non-different from all the elements, so if you see the Lord there, he's actually present. But if you don't, just his potencies are taken care of. You know what I'm saying? You know, Prahlad Maharaj sees Nrisimhadeva in the pillar, so he personally is there. Otherwise, just his potencies are there doing the pillar job.
So it depends on the consciousness.
It depends on consciousness, yes. But the point is your consciousness doesn't create material energy. You know, if your consciousness is there, therefore you created the forest. No, the forest is there. But you thinking that what it is about the forest you like, its beauty or its freshness or its openness, that's not caused by the dead matter. That's caused by the Lord, His internal potency. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there is a hand in the mirror. But its movement's not actually caused by the mirror. It's caused by the person, the original person. Illusion is thinking the mirror is generating that movement.
Mm-hmm. Like the Buddhist reasoning that the material is created by consciousness.
The material concept is created by consciousness. But the material energy or the external energy is not. You know what I'm saying? But because you have that desire, therefore the material energy takes that form. It transforms, but it's actually there. But what's not there is that you think that that matter is what's generating your experience. You know what I'm saying? The body's dead matter. The, you know, other elements of the world are dead matter. They're seemingly interacting. So you think that interaction is generating your experience. It's not generating your experience. The experiences come because of the connection with the original. Right? It means the tree's in the water and the branches are swaying and like that. Why is it doing that? Right? Because the original branch, there's a breeze blowing and it's moving. So therefore, so it's the reflection's actually there and the reflection's actually moving. But to think that its movement and colors and all that is coming from itself, the reflection is generating that, that's illusion. No, the original tree is generating that.
Well, that way you also mentioned that the jivas are controlling the material manifestation through their desires.
Yeah, the controlling means, it's not that they're trying to, they are minute controllers. It has to be sanctioned by the Lord, carried out by the material energy. That's why the material energy is considered one of the causes. Right? Because the material energy itself, through the Lord's sanction and potency, is transformed, not through the jiva's potency. See, this is where the mistake is if we're saying, yes, it's because the jiva, it's manifest, yes, but he's not the one whose potency manifests it because of his consciousness.
So his desires.
His desires, just like this. The child wants lunch. Right? And then there's lunch on the table. So did the child produce the lunch? No, who produced the lunch? The mother produced it. Right? Or did the bowls themselves just produce it? Maybe the table. It produced the bowls. You know, but then where'd the table come from? Okay, yeah, something like this. You understand? So that's the thing. Is so that lunch is there because the child's there, right? Because if the child wasn't there, there wouldn't be lunch because the mother would be at the spa, right? Eating a salad, right? You know, so that's what would be happening. Yeah, you understand? So it's because the child is there, therefore it's happening. So in that way you can say the child is the cause. That's why on all those four causes, each one is a cause. But they're all ultimately depending upon the supreme cause. Like that. Yes.
I'm just trying to understand this reflection business. So when I'm manipulating or my desires of manipulating this chatter, is there an original chatter in the spiritual world?
There is, but it's how you say it? The point is the Lord, it means there's the generic principle, mm-hmm. right? And then there's the more specific. But the more specific is connected to who?
To me.
Okay, you and?
The material world. Krishna.
And?
Krishna.
But which form of Krishna?
Brahma.
Paramatma.
Oh, okay.
Paramatma is localized. That means it's happening there.
Okay.
You know, the reflection's not beyond the Brahma Jyoti.
Okay.
Because that's the other point, is we think, okay, material world, this is all material world, then there's over the spiritual world. But the point is Tathasta means the two are at the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
You understand? So it's happening right there. But the point is it's the internal, the Lord. So what is it that you're... Okay, the chatter. What is the quality that we're taking of the chatter?
Heat.
Yeah, okay. So what is... Where does the quality of heat come from?
Krishna.
Okay. And then what forms what forms or what activities that therefore serve or attain the quality of heat, where is that coming from? We're talking causation here. You have three options because we've already taken. The quality is Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, heat's Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So then, when we're talking about the reflection, where is the concept of that, you know, wool or a chudder And how you wear the chadar comes from, you know, it generates heat. Mahatattva, that will be the place where the Lord and
Lakshmi
are interacting. Does that make sense? Right?
A little bit.
Okay. Why here? You're feeling cold. Put this on.
No.
Why not?
I don't feel like rocky.
I mean, people, like, let's say, you know, they're out in the cold and all that, you know, it means that you have a house and it's built out of stones, it would be comfortable to go inside. Why would you go inside? Would it be cold or warm?
It would be warmer.
Okay, so then therefore this stone is connected with warmth. So therefore wear this.
But not in that form.
Not in this form. So you're saying the form of rock being connected to heat is only there if it's done in the form of a wall or a room.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So who defines that?
That would be Krishna.
Okay. But in what form? What expansion? Okay, it's Paramatma. He's controlling it. Mm-hmm. But we're saying here, okay, Krishna is existing in four, how do you say? Manifestations. Himself as the Supreme Lord, as the part of, you know, as the Supreme Brahman, Bhagavan. His internal potency, right? The external potency, and the jivas. Okay? So, who is serving Krishna as heat by taking on the form of rocks that can be made into walls or wool that can be made into chadars? Right? The internal potency. And then how can I put these rocks together? I just kind of pile them up in a heap and there it is. I go to the contractor and he says, okay, you're going to need 20 trucks of rocks. So I buy 20 trucks of rocks, they dump them off in my backyard and in a big pile and there it is. Right?
Not entirely.
Okay. So what's missing?
Cement.
So I throw in a few bags of cement. Okay. For some water. Hey, sand.
Structure.
But who defines that that's how the rocks have to be put together, that you'll get heat?
An engineer.
But who's defined the laws of engineering that the engineer is looking at his book and using? Krishna. But as? Internal potency. Do you understand? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. So that's defined by the internal potency. Krishna is the quality, the internal potency defines those forms and those actions and those situations that therefore attain that quality. Do you understand? And that's what you see in the spiritual world, right? In the spiritual world, when it gets cold, what do they do?
Put on a chadar
or go inside a house. So that's all defined by the internal potency. Right? That's her service to Krishna. Okay? So that's what's going on. So that's already been defined. So all the ways that you could wear the chadar and this and that, that's already been defined. So what are you doing? Imitating that, yes. Now, can you take the cheddar, fold it up, put it in your back pocket, and then it's going to keep you warm?
No.
Okay. Why not?
I'm not even going to try. Because that's not how it works in the spiritual world.
Yes, so that's not how the original cause and formal cause work. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the reflection, the closer the reflection is to the original, then the closer it gets to that point, right? So that's what people, by observing the material nature, they somehow or another see that if you do something this way, you get this result. But if you don't do it that way, you don't. So they'll call that science, because they use their intelligence. But what's missed is that, where did that science come from? That's what they can't define. Right? So they'll say, no, but we worked this out. That's why it works. No. But that's like the Buddhist. Because I thought it, therefore it is. Right? So it's not that. No, it was already there. You're, you know, intelligent enough, okay, you worked it out, great. But it still works because of God's laws. It doesn't work because of someone else's laws. Right? It's not Newton that makes the apple. So every time an apple falls on your head, then you can curse Newton, right? Right? It's his law. You know, why apples? You know, well, think of it. You know, what happened is it was elephants, right? If elephants fell off a tree and stuff like that, then you'd be a problem, right? So better apples. Be satisfied with apples. Right? You know, if he had been sitting at the bottom of, you know, Everest and a big monster rock had fallen off and squished him, then the law would have been proven, but, you know, it wouldn't have gotten his name and no one would have known about it. Right? Does that make sense? So then they would have said, what happened to Newton? And then the Sherpa would have said, oh, he got squished by the rock, like that. And then it would have been, you know, Sherpa's law. Like that. So then. So are we catching this point? In other words, it's a way of seeing. It's not just some facts, okay, trying to put that together. Very simple, but you apply it into that situation. So here we're combining the four causes with the reflection, right? And those four causes are connected to the four manifestations of the Lord, right? Does that make sense? So the external potency is always going to be in the position of external potency. But it's Brahman, so it's connected to the Lord. Now, you use it separately, your illusion, you're in the material existence. You don't, you use it connected to the Lord. That means if you connect to the Lord, how do you connect it? Can you directly connect it? There's you and there's the original cause. What's in between? Material energy is the material cause. But it's the formal cause, it's the internal potency. Right? The internal potency is what is obtaining the quality. So if you serve the internal potency, you obtain the quality. So in illusion, you think, no, I have performed the activity as my own, you know, determination, and because of me, therefore the quality is manifest. Right? But it's not. It's you perform the activity that's in line with the internal potency. Therefore, you get that quality that you're desiring. Right? You're working in the reflection, but still, you're getting that quality you want. Does this make sense? Right? This is the point. That's why it's also pointed out material cause, because you actually don't even make the material energy transform. But we think we're the doer. We had the desire, the Lord sanctions the modes of nature, carry it out, and so the material energy transforms. So in either case, we're still servant. Whether we're in knowledge and dealing with the internal potency, or an illusion and dealing with the external potency. But in either case, we're still servant. You know, so that's the point. We have this knowledge. We see things as they are. Right?
So the ahankara would be the medium to think.
Yes. The false ego then makes you think that all this is there. Yes.
So does this mean that the jivas are connected to the external potency on the premise of the internal potency, and in that way they can communicate with Bhagavan? Is that nonsense, or does that make sense?
No, it means that communicate. Well, what do you mean by communicate?
Well, connect to Krishna.
Connect, yes. Connect, yes. Because, in other words, we understand, means the point is we understand the reflection.
Yeah.
But if we understand the reflection is coming from the original, yeah, what are we seeing?
We're seeing the original.
Yeah, but if we don't understand it comes from the original, what are we seeing?
Illusion.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. If you're looking in the mirror and you think the mirror is producing that face, then you're dealing with illusion. But if you understand the mirror is simply reflecting your face, then that's a knowledge. You understand? But the dealing will be the same. It's just a matter, are you the mirror? Or are you the person and that's being reflected in the mirror?
The illusion will be also connected to its temporariness, right?
Yeah, because how long is the reflection in the mirror? Yeah, it's temporary. But how long is the person there? Right? Yeah, so that's the point. So the original nature is eternal. So Krishna and the internal potency, that's eternal. The jivas are eternal. But when you're looking into the material existence, the material existence is eternal, but the particular manifestation is temporary. Does that make sense?
What makes this experience difficult to even know in this instrumental position?
What makes this experience difficulty? Because it means if you're doing, let's say you know that you're doing something for someone else, right? And you want to do this for someone else. So if various problems come up, it's not so much of a disturbance, right? It's understood that there's going to be some endeavor, right? But if those obstacles come up and you're doing something for yourself, that's more of a problem, right? So when we see it in connection with only ourselves, that's their problem. When they're seen in connection with others, it's not a problem. It's just like this. Okay, let's say you went and bought something for somebody. Okay? Now you had to, make the arrangements, do all kinds of things, get through traffic for hours, stand in lines, get in there, and there was the last one there, and fight with whoever it was there, and you finally got it and everything. And, so now when you give that to the person, do you not want to talk about all those things? Or would you be happy to tell them all those things? Yeah, because why? It's part of the process. So you don't mind it. But now let's say you were getting that for yourself. You want to talk about that with others? You understand? You understand? It's not really, because that was an annoyance. So that's the thing, is that there's going to be an obstacle. That's just normal. Otherwise, what's the meaning of getting something done? Getting something done means there's a difference between where you're situated and what you want. So right there, that there's a difference, that's already an obstacle. You know what I'm saying? So that principle of bridging the gap is an obstacle. But the point is why would you bridge that gap? Right? Because of relationship. So if there's no relationship, it's a problem. If there's a relationship, it's not a problem. Right? And then some say, if you don't have relationships, there's no need to bridge the gap. So therefore, all your problems go away. Because bridging the gap is the problem. You understand? So that's the pessimistic view. Is that okay? So that's the whole point, is that now we're opening this, is that Krishna's bringing in that actual personal relationship element. It's been defined before. But now he's dealing with it directly. So that means all the difficulties then aren't connected with the process anymore. You know what I'm saying? Obstacles are there, but now they won't be as difficult because it's being based on the principle of the relationship with the Lord, the devotees. Is it the same thing? So in other words, all we're trying to define, what we call all this big lofty philosophy, that all we're trying to do is convince ourselves that actual relationships exist. And they're there. And you can actually become happy by real relationships. Right? Rather than being the, supreme, absolute, dictatorial lord and master of the mirage. Yeah. Machiavelli wrote a book on it.
So,
also Sun Tzu. Yes. He also wrote a book on it.
Can we say that the movement of internal energy is like something like a Tao, you know?
Yes. But at the same time, as there's the origin of it, then there's the actual manifestation of it. Right? Qi in its movement, there's principles on which it already exists. Then there's the manifestation of its actual movement. So one is the internal potency, the other is the external.
So the qi is the external and the Tao is the internal.
You could say like that, but at the same time is the principle on which qi works, right, is based on the internal. It means you take the qi, here, you take the qi out where? Here. You don't take it out here. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You can expand here, but it moves through here. Who defined that? Did qi define that?
Well, it's a need defined.
Yes. But the same time as the Li is defining it, but the point is if you're going to take there, if you want to make the Qi is external, then the Li has two parts, the masculine and feminine part. Right? So they just combine them as one. Because if there's two, that means then after attaining liberation, then there's nothing. But if there's two, then that would mean after liberation there's still relationship. Right? And since there's basically a pessimistic view about relationships and all that, therefore you're trying to get rid of them. You know what I'm saying? So the Li is two. You know what I'm saying? Just like the movement of qi still works on yin and yang, right? But the Li also is working on yin and yang. Otherwise, why does qi work on yin and yang? Right? Your hand moves in the mirror. Why? Because your actual hand moves. So because there's the male-female principle in the Li, therefore in the Qi, there'll also be. You understand? So what's happening is they're using the Qi, which is the external. But actually what makes it work is because they've somehow or another connecting to the Li, but they actually don't know how. There's no science for teaching it. Right? Right? The door of no door. Right? The door is through which qi can move. Of no door. Right? Because that's the Li. So when you understand that, then you can use it. Because just knowing qi is there is not the big deal. And being able to move it this way and that way, that's not the big deal. It only works, someone becomes a master when they actually understand Li, but they actually don't know that they're understanding that. You understand?
So both qi and the Li, they move according to Tao, you know, the internal energy?
Means, the point is, depending how you're defining it, is Tao separate? You have qi and Li, and then there's Tao, so you have three elements?
No, Tao should be in there. Tao is manifestation of the Li and Qi combined together.
Okay, so that would mean then if you're taking the manifestation, then so is there potency in Li, in Tao? Your arm moves because of what? Okay, your arm is what? Is that Tao?
No, it's Qi.
That's Qi.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's Tao?
Tao is the way the arm moves.
Okay, but who defined the Tao? Do we define it?
No, that's
the Li. The Qi is defining it.
Yeah.
And the Qi is defining it based on the Li.
Yeah.
Okay? So that means the Tao and the Qi, they go together, the two aspects of one thing. In other words, the situation and the potency itself and how that potency has to move or act to obtain Li. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Then that is reflected into this external energy that therefore you have the gross body is doing different things. You know what I'm saying? So when they say they're moving the Qi, then technically they're moving the reflection of the Qi. Right? It's just a subtler manifestation of the external potency. You know what I'm saying? They're not moving the chi. They're coming in line with the chi. Because as soon as you think you're doing this Tao work, no, the path is gone. You have to be able to move with it. So you have to serve it. So that's what we're saying. But the point is it becomes difficult unless you have the personal explanation. We can explain it. They can't. That's why they'll put you into situations. Right? Does that make sense? I mean, just like the person is performing his skill. Okay? And he's quite expert at it. But is he doing it, you know, on a day-to-day basis, whenever he does it, is he standing under a waterfall? Yes or no?
No.
No. But to learn that connection, he may have stood under a waterfall. Right?
Yeah.
Right? So in other words, they create situations in which you might make that connection. They don't know how to make it for you. They can only tell you what is there. Right? You understand? That's why in all these things, no one ever gives you an answer. They show the path. You know, and you have to figure it out. So they make it seem like a very glorious thing. On one level it is, yes, you're teaching that. But what they leave out is that the reason the person can only show you the path and can't give you an answer is because he doesn't know. That's the real reason. But they know it exists, but they don't know how. They don't know how they got there. So that's why they have all these situations they put themselves in, just to create that. So you make the connection. Does that make sense? So we see this principle, meaning, how do you say, non-Taoist light. It's the same principle. It's just that we're defining the personal element of it, and they're defining the impersonal. Right? Because they, you know, are still worried that the personal wouldn't give the same results. Right? Personal has always been a problem. Right? But they know the material works simply because of this, you know, qi and li. But at the same time, as they're trying to obtain something higher that get rid of the disturbances in the material sphere, then they figure that everything will become nothing. But the point is if it's a reflection, that means then there's an original. If activity here seemingly makes you happy and it doesn't, that's because you're dealing with the reflection. So if you learn how to deal with the original, then you'll actually be happy. Right? You know, you try to eat the apple in the mirror, it's a problem. But if you eat a real apple, right? So they say, I try to eat the apple, it's a problem. So all the trouble to eat the apple, the anxiety because I think the apple, so I just get rid of that by saying it doesn't exist. So it may solve that initial problem, but does it solve the problem that you're hungry and that's why you're eating the apple? Because that's the point. Why are people acting? This is what the Mayavadis and they can't explain. Why would you be wanting family and position and money and sense of that? Why would you want that? Relationship, because it's the nature of the soul. So that they can't define. Because they're saying, oh, it's all one. And so, therefore, by illusion, you've come into and taken individual consciousness. But why would you do that? If you're already perfect and satisfied as Brahman, why would you want to become an individual that's an illusion and suffering? And if you say pastime, you got to be stupid. Because, you know, who would do that? You know, it's just like, you know, you're walking along, it's a great day, sun's out, breeze is blowing, right, the butterflies are flitting, the birds are chirping, and all this and that, and then, you know, you somehow or another walk by, you know, an open sewage, and so, therefore, for pastime, you jump in. Right? And then, you know, there's the whole thing of getting out, you know, because, you know, I am not this sewer. You know, the sewer doesn't exist, you know, like that. You know, all these different things, you know, so. This is what they're doing. So why would they do it? So that they can't define is because of the nature of the soul, the nature of the relationship between the soul and God.
that's why Krishna is saying this chapter is superior to the relationship.
Yes, because it is that. He's defined it all before, so you know what's there. In other words, the first six chapters are defining the mechanics, the overall mechanics of what's actually going on. You can, or they can say the situational mechanics, you know? I mean, so what are all the tools you're going to use? Right? Then the middle six then points out that why would you use them except for that connection with the Lord and that devotion? Right? So that's superior. Right? And that devotion is the central principle. But now, why this is higher? Because it's been defined before that the knowledge in the middle six chapters is the king, and these other two are, you know, like, you know, how you say, sides of a sandwich, right? You know, so they're supporting that. But this is superior because this one then shows you how you're going to get that knowledge in the middle six chapters, right? By using, you know, very properly the knowledge in the first six. Right? Because these are the techniques of actually how to apply it. You know what I'm saying? Just like, okay, you want to get some juice, right? And so you use the juicer. Right? So I've explained that there's you, there's an orange, there's a juicer, there's a cup. You know, because otherwise we think we don't understand, you know, like that. So, you know, we're gnawing on the, you know, the orange and we have our hand in the juicer, right? There's going to be a problem, right? You know, so we learn what's actually the situation, the relationship, and what are the processes, right? So that's clear. And now, okay, we know that we do all these things, but now what's the actual goal? Right? The juice is in the glass. Right? Does that make sense? So now these last six chapters are teaching that finer science of how you would actually deal with the juicer to get that juice in the glass. You know, so here, dealing with the modes of nature. You know, or, you understand? So, like that. So then we see actually how it works. Right? Because there's always some little trick. Yes.
Does that mean it comes from Vanda Prayojana Abhidaya?
In one sense, you could say yes, like that. I mean, see, depending upon how you're perceiving it, then you know, what's the particular perspective you're taking? Then you would do it, because you could also take it. Yeah, you could take it that your devotion is the goal, like that. But also, that's the mood in which you perform the activity, so that would also be sambandha, you know, the mentality, the spirit, like that. You know, it's the purpose. Same time as these elements, then you're defining the field, so that's sambandha, but you're defining it so that you can use it more properly, which is abhideya. So it just depends upon which is... That's why one has to know the general concept, but then... More important than knowing the general concept is how that general concept can be applied in the real life situation. So that's what this is starting to do. Right? Because to know how to apply, just like we were discussing that, we've been discussing now for, you know, many months about the four causes and, you know, affliction and all these different things. And we understood it, but now we're trying to make it so you can actually see it. Rather than just understand it, right? So therefore, it appears as if, you know, you don't even know what it is. You understand? Because before, the question is just, you know, said, okay, here's a pillar. Okay, you know, what's holding the pillar up? You know, like this, we can go through the steps. But now is that? So we're talking about, okay, what is the mechanics? What's the elements that are there, right? The knowledge of the theory. But now we're trying to see, can you see that? That's then this next point. Right? So this is because if you can actually use it, then you can properly obtain it. Right? Because it doesn't, you understand how the modes are working, it doesn't matter whether you're using karma, jnana, or dhyana. The point is that you'll be able to use them. And then you'll understand that's serving bhakti. Right? So these are details of that. Yes.
In the Bible, there is a famous statement that if you have enough faith, you will say to this mountain that jump to the sea and it will
do it. Okay, if you had enough faith, but the point is faith in what? Remember, we're talking Bible here.
Yeah.
Faith in Jethro Tull, maybe. Faith in what?
You mentioned this example that the big elephant is conditioned, but the rock is unconditioned. So.
No, that's there, but the point is faith in what? You're avoiding the question.
The God?
Okay, the God. Okay. So now if you have faith in the God, okay, then... The point is if you had faith in God, then yes, it could be moved. Okay. If you want to keep within your particular sphere. How did the Red Sea part? That's a big thing, right? How did it part? By?
Faith.
Okay. But just then why would God apply his power there?
Faith, Moses' faith.
Because faith. Right? But what was the point? It's not just what you want to do. It's what God wants to do. So if you have faith, then you can be involved as an instrument in amazing things. Not that you sit around and move the mountains around. You know, you look out your window and, that skyscraper's kind of in the way. You know, I'm walking the morning sun, so I think it should be over there. It's like that. You know, it's not like that. You know what I'm saying? The point is you have faith, you can be involved as an instrument. You know what I'm saying? The point is you think, I'm doing it, that's a problem. You understand? That's the point. Moses throws down his staff, it turns into a snake. Does he say, I did that?
No.
He's saying this is God's potency. So his point is, you know, the God against your gods. You understand? So the point is it was an instrument. Let me say. Yeah. Yes. Yes, yeah, then you can do amazing things.
Maharaj Prabhupada would be an example of this faith in what Krishna wants to do.
Yes, so therefore, you know, he went to America with nothing and started an international movement.
Okay.
Yes.
So maybe the key word is also faith and not so much belief. I mean, it's not so much that you believe.
Well, you have to have two. I mean, it means faith is based on knowledge, because if faith's not based on knowledge, then it can be disturbed, mm-hmm. right? Because what's the problem in the modern elements that faith can be disturbed by what?
Doubt.
Doubt, yeah, which is intellectual. So that means if you have a strong intellectual basis, mm-hmm. therefore your faith will be firm. Right? Because the point is in these things, in the modern scenario, does the devil come up and use logic?
No.
It's sentiment.
Yeah.
So that means your sentiment, you know, which is supposed to be good sentiment, against his sentiment, which is supposed to be bad sentiment. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. But if you have knowledge that your sentiment is right, then it's not just a feeling. Because you're defining it that way, but the devil says it's the other way. So, hey, you know, who's right here? Mm-hmm. And then if you say, no, well, this is right because this is what God says, and then you're basing it on knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then if you know why God said it, then that makes it even more, because, you know, then you won't have a doubt that, well, why am I doing this?
And then you would like to be an instrument.
Yeah, and then you can be an instrument in it, because that's one's position. So the point is God's performing nice pastimes, so you can be a part of that. So the element of that, yes, Brahman is performing pastimes, that's correct. You know, but not all these other stupid things. You know, he's doing wonderful things, so you can be part of that. Otherwise, you can always be part of something stupid.
The Advaita Swami says, independently stupid.
Independently stupid, yes.
Instead of independently thoughtful.
Independently thoughtful, yes. Independently stupid.
Yes.
Confidently, independently stupid. I would just have to say that. Yeah, I was going to say. Independently stupid with panache. But very few people actually are in that position, so. Thus, sattva binds the jiva with the conception that he is happy and knowledgeable. Right? It means you have a little bit of knowledge, and so therefore you're a little bit satisfied. So then you think everything's fine, so you get conditioned to that. But the point is there's more. Why wouldn't one... Here. How is it possible to be bound by knowledge and happiness, Srila Prabhupada explains. The difficulty here is that when a living entity is situated in the mode of goodness, he becomes conditioned to feel that he is advanced in knowledge and is better than others. Right? So, you know, that's basically the academic position, right? The professional position, right? Right? It's just like, let us say you have an Ayurvedic doctor and a, you know, modern doctor. Let's say allopathic doctor, okay? And you have, you know, a disease that's not just something common that people know about, you know, like that. And so then if you ask the Ayurvedic doctor, what is it and all that, he'll tell you what it is and how you got it, you know, and, you know, what you can do to avoid it. The allopath, when you ask him these questions, he'll say, you know, you won't understand. You're not a doctor. You know, you're a lay person, so you won't understand this. So simply I'll tell you what to do, and then that's it. So what's the difference between the two?
The allopathic doctor treats the illness and the...
Not on that thing. We're not talking about the philosophy. We're talking in connection with this last sentence we just said.
No, he's
proud of his knowledge. So he thinks he is the knowledge. Rather, while the Ayurvedic doctor, if he's properly situated, will understand this is a body of knowledge that already exists. I can serve it. Right? But the other one, because of the principle of the materialism, thinks I am the knowledge. So knowledge is better than ignorance. Therefore, I'm better than others who are ignorant of this path. The best examples are the scientist and the philosopher. Each is very proud of his knowledge, and because they generally improve their living conditions, they feel a sort of material happiness. This sense of advanced happiness in conditioned life makes them bound by the mode of goodness of material nature. As such, they are attracted towards working in the mode of goodness. And as long as they have an attraction for working in that way, they have to take some type of body in the modes of nature, right? Working in the mode of goodness. So they themselves may be in ignorance, you know, because they don't see the connection. But they like, you know, nice situations, orderly situations, structured situations. Everybody deals gently and nicely and, you know, in a cultured way. It's based around the knowledge. Right? So they like to situate themselves in that element of goodness, right? But unfortunately, yes, they have to. Thus, there's no likelihood of liberation, right? Because they identify with the mode of goodness. So that means you have to take birth to continue. That is your existence. And so, since material manifestations are temporary, then it will go for a certain time. It has to end. Then you start it again because you do exist. So then you'll be born in a situation where you can continue that. Right? Thus, there is no likelihood of liberation or being transferred to the spiritual world. Repeatedly, one may become a philosopher, a scientist, or a poet, and repeatedly become entangled in the same disadvantages of birth and death. But due to the illusion of the material energy, one thinks that sort of life is pleasant. So in other words, if you've improved your situation through anything, so he sees also someone through power, he feels he's improved his situation, he's proud of that, he's conditioned to that. Right? Whatever way they think that they've made it better, then... The mode of passion, so means we have to see the modes, because otherwise we may think that these modes don't, it means the karmas is just all ignorance. Yes, it may be that the existence principle is based on ignorance, but still the other modes are all there, and that situates them. The mode of passion, born of unlimited desires and longing, binds a living entity to material fruit of actions. The mode of passion is identical with the mutual attachment between men and women. Once this attachment is established, it leads to desire for sense objects such as home, children, and friends. This is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.8. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Right? So as we were saying before, is this principle of the masculine-feminine principle is there in the spiritual world, but it's based on the inherent relationship of service and serve. Right? So it's not based on lust. It's pure. The difficulty then comes is that's reflected here. Right? So then the male and female, what's it made out of?
Matter.
Yeah. Right? So is the dead matter in the form of the male and the dead matter in the form of the female, are they really attracted to each other?
No.
Like that. So that illusion, then one becomes entangled by that because one identifies with the body and one thinks what's connected with that form, that's the real thing. Right, but it's reflected from the original because Krishna is the original male. Right, all other living entities are female. So therefore, you know, those forms, those situations, those interactions, that's worthy of attachment. Right, does that make sense? But we're just seeing that the reflection, so it becomes involved in that through the modes of nature.
Right. So freedom would be to see the potency. Inside.
Freedom would be to see the potencies, yes, that would, yeah, but also to see it in an uplifting way. Because you can also see them and still use it in the material fashion. Because technically, if you want to be successful in the Jaiminese philosophy and stuff, you have to be able to see a bit beyond. Because otherwise, why would you work so hard this lifetime with very little, you know, material facilities and so much sacrifice? For that next life, then you're going to be happy. So they have to see some bigger picture.
I mean, the potencies of Krishna behind.
Yes, if you see the potencies of Krishna and all that, then one is liberated. So one's not bound by those actions, right? So then one is an instrument seeing these things in connection with Krishna, right? Does that make sense? Then it's just a matter of the quality of what you're dealing with, right? Because the quality means quality is also there. It means you're dealing with what's the problem with something of a machine of inferior quality?
Give inferior product.
It's also much more difficult to work with, more temperament. But you have something of higher quality, then it works much better. So there comes a point at which one is not, you know, one. How do you say? In other words, if one has been dealing with the material energy in a particular way because of one's attachments, then what's the drive to deal in that with that situation? Why are you inspired? Let's say the man got married, you know, and has a family because of material desire. So what's his motive?
To enjoy,
right? For himself,
yeah.
Right? Like that. But it's cooperative, so it's cooperative enjoyment. You know, you work together, then you both, everybody enjoys. But your purpose is you're going to enjoy, right? So now this person now comes in contact with Krishna consciousness, right? So he learns his philosophy, right? But he still has that tendency or desire to enjoy within that family environment, but now he sees it in connection to the Lord. So he becomes liberated. But what's still his motive?
To enjoy.
That's the direct. But indirect is that he wants to serve Krishna. When he sees the potencies of connection. So with time, by practice, now he sees that situation in connection with Krishna. And he wants to serve Krishna. Now what's his motive?
To serve Krishna.
So, but what was his motive before?
To enjoy.
So he's in that situation because of his previous motive. His present motive is just to serve Krishna. Right? So now, if that situation is favorable for serving Krishna, is there a problem in remaining in it? No, so therefore the family situation is not a problem. But if it is a problem, then is he going to be comfortable with it? No. Why?
Because it stops the service.
It stops the service. But before he didn't mind it. Why? Because his motive was different. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why if it's favorable, what's the problem wherever one's situated? But if it's not favorable, why would you situate yourself there? You understand? So that means that's that knowledge. Now these chapters are giving you the fine points on how to know how to deal with that. Right? Because the point is then you have that knowledge, but are you dealing in knowledge? The man's dealing with the family, but he's dealing based on knowledge. He actually understands what is a man, what is a woman, what is a child, what is a house, what is money, what's the relationship, what they all do. Does he know that? Or it's still just that, you know, he deals with it because he wants to. Because if you have knowledge, then the point is, you know, man has to get what man wants, but woman has to get what woman wants, child has to get what child wants. Money has to get what money wants. Right? If I take money and sit it there, you know, on the table, you know, and then I come back after 3 years, what's on the table?
Nothing.
Yeah, no, right? But let's say no one came along. Okay? Just let's be theoretical here. What's there? The same. Okay. But outside, what do things cost? The same?
No.
More. So actually, what's on the table?
Less.
So now, is that working? Is that money being engaged according to the nature of money?
No.
Right? So that's what's wrong about it. So you could say, oh, I'm detached, I don't get involved in all this. Great, but then if you're detached, then you don't get involved in anything that requires money. If you're going to deal with money, then deal with money properly. It has to increase. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that there's no problem, but it's your motive. But the point is just to change the motive and not change the knowledge, then it may make it hard. Right? I come up to the copy machine and I have pure 100% personal motives why I want to copy something. Okay? But I have no idea how the machine works. Okay? Right? There's going to be a problem. Right? Now, once I get there, then I meet another, you know, comrade, whatever it is, colleague, let's say. And they explain to me the fault in my ways of approaching this machine in a completely, totally motivated fashion, right? So now I see it in proper knowledge that I should be seeing it in connection with the Lord, right? So now the situation, you know, the perspective has changed, so then that way I'm devotionally situated, okay? But I still have no idea how to operate the machine. Am I going to be successful?
No.
So this is very important. So just because the man now became a devotee still doesn't mean he knows anything what he's doing. Do you understand?
Yes.
That's the point.
I know
that's
moves.
The point. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then one has to know the science. You know, how to apply it. What actually one's doing there. So that's what we see. The first ones are saying, what is the situation and how to do? This is now starting to give that finer points of the science. But these finer points are still based on the bigger principle. Right? In other words, how to operate that machine is still only useful if you understand that the machine be operated for the Lord, not for yourself. Right? Does that make sense? So these ones are more technical. Right? And so, but because they're trying to show you how to engage that, that way they're considered new knowledge or higher knowledge. Right? It's a progress going through the Gita. But at the same time, it's the highest knowledge is that devotion to the Lord. That's always going to remain there. But as far as how to mechanically make it done, then that's going to be higher. Right? You know, the principles of math are the same, whether it's, you know, nursery school or, you know, how you say you're doing your doctorate. Right? But the point is your connection with it is more advanced. So this is meaning the connection is more advanced, but the knowledge isn't still, it's still subservient to that which is in the middle six chapters. Does that make sense?
So the part, the mechanical part actually is the whole part or the lead part, you know.
No. The goal is the li. But it means you understand how the li works, yeah. Right? In other words, because the li is the ultimate goal, yeah. Right? And the Tao is that path to get that ultimate goal by engaging the chi,
yeah.
Right? So, but the point is so you have to know that science, but you also have to be able to apply that into actually your practical life because. That li and qi has to be, and Tao has to be applied to your physical body and the physical surrounding. You understand? So the skill is only important in its connection to the Lord. If you don't know that philosophy, the skill is not worthwhile. So when devotees talk about being professional and all that, that's fine. Being professional is not a problem. But the point is if in being professional they lose the purpose of being professional, of connecting to the Lord, then they've lost everything. Then they're like, you know, that story of the scholar and the boatman. Right? He has all that knowledge, but it's not going to do him any good. You can be as professional as you want, but at some point, you know, you hit 65. Then what do people think of your professionalness? You know, they want you out of there. You know, they don't care. You know, letting the young people do this. You know, yes. Good intention, it'll happen.
Yeah, and devotion. Of course, devotion is.
So, is it just by good intention, just because you want to feel like it and just sit there that, you know, your 6-month-old baby stops crying? No, it's by work. So, that's the thing. And if you have, let's say, you. Now, will the child stop crying because you don't know what you're doing? You simply have that full motherly affection and love and well-wishing, and that's enough, right?
By having it, you'll work out.
By having it, you'll work to get it. So that's the point. So they're taking it for granted that the devotional attitude's there, but it kind of may be or it may not be. Because unless you know it's there, unless it's focused, it's cultivated, how will it be there? What's the motive? So if the focus is on being professional, what's the motive?
So it swings the other way. They think, well, we're not getting it done because we don't know how to do it.
Yes.
So they go, okay, we have to learn how to do it. And they
forget. Yeah, then they forget why they're doing it.
And also when you get professional, sometimes you can be...
That's what's up here. The difficulty is that here is that when a living entity is situated in the mode of goodness, he becomes conditioned to feel that he has advanced in knowledge and is better than others. Each is very proud of his knowledge, and because they generally improve their living conditions, they feel a sort of material happiness. So that's what happens. And then being conditioned by goodness, then they don't see pure goodness. Because pure goodness is fanatic. and goodness is practical.
And also pure goodness would convey a culture with it, right?
Pure goodness has a culture. Are you saying America has no culture? is that what you're implying? Do I catch that those undertones? You know, it's that famous statement of Mahatma Gandhi.
Yeah.
When he visited England, and when he came back, then someone asked him, what do you think of Western culture? And he said, that would be nice. So, yeah, that's the point. Western civilization, it would be nice if there was. Does that make sense? Yes. So. Yeah, so I and mine. I is the sambandha, mine is the prayojana. So then, what does that mean? What's your abhideya going to be?
Getting things.
It's going to be material, right? Because your identity is material, your goal is material, so your action will be material. But if you think, I'm servant of Krishna and Krishna's pleasure, then what's the activity?
Devotional.
Right? So that's why always this point of I and mine is being brought out, because that's actually... Because your thinking is I, your feeling is mine. So your willing will be material. So if your thinking is I'm servant, your feeling is I'm, to please Krishna, your willing will be spiritual.
Maharaj, you're talking about the mind. So just clarifying one point that you made. So by getting this transcendental knowledge, I rise my material intelligence to spiritual intelligence, and then the mind goes with it, right? So I have a spiritual mind.
Means because it's as the point before meant the living entity, because he is transcendental, has nothing to do with the material nature. So the living entity has spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence, spiritual senses, but they become covered. So we identify with the covering rather than our actual nature. So because of that, that's why we suffer. So if you understand the original nature, then you're working with spiritual intelligence and spiritual mind, because spiritual means connected to Krishna. Right? In order to obtain his desired objects for sense gratification, one has to work very hard. Therefore, the whole material world is predominantly in the mode of passion. Formerly, the criterion for advancement was measured according to the progress in the mode of goodness. Modern civilization measures its advancement according to the development in the mode of passion. Right? So that's because before it was goodness. You had knowledge, there was upliftment, there was these kind of things. That was considered, people did their duties, everything like that. Right? But then people get conditioned to that, and those with more of that think, I'm better than those who are not, and so they don't deal properly. So the ones on the bottom, then they rise up, and then there's a problem. Because then the ones on the bottom, what's their motive? To gain that knowledge so that they can become proud and do that? No, they just want that kind of facility and position. But it's not based on knowledge or goodness. So it's based on passion. Right? So you work hard. The person works very hard, then he's considered good. He's gotten results. But if the guy has knowledge, then they're thinking, he's a wastrel, right? He's doing nothing.
There was a story in one of these... leadership courses showing one Japanese in a company. He was starting, there was many little symbols of people in a pile for the bosses in the top. And said, what's your goal? To go from here to here.
Some devotee told me later that they visited and he was on the top of the pile. So I guess he got Prabhupada's blessing. The story is in connection with Prabhupada going.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's all they want. It's just when it gets them. Because the idea, if I have it, then I'll be happy. But the point is we're still saying is that, okay, you have it, now what will you do with it? You know, so that's the whole point. How will it improve your relationships? How will it be applied? Otherwise, you have it, and if it doesn't improve, then what's the meaning? You know, and then temporary relationships are still not going to cross the pond because they're not actually relationships. Right? And so only the eternal platform, that then you're establishing real relationships. You know what I'm saying? You have a family, you're dealing, you know, husband dead matter with wife dead matter and parent dead matter with child dead matter. So is there actually a relationship? No, because if it's based on the body, technically it's only an agreed relationship. You know, everybody else agrees that this is, you know, the way it works. You know, like, you know, kids in a game of marbles or something, you know, there's some rules and so everybody agrees, so, you know, it's cool. But, you know what I'm saying? They're creating something out of nothing. Right? But if you're seeing that you have the living entity is trying to see their position in connection with Krishna, and therefore cooperate with other living entities in that service to Krishna and assist each other in that, now do you have a relationship? Yes. But it's based as devotees, soul to soul. It's not technically husband and wife. But the medium that you're using to serve Krishna is husband and wife, or you know, children. So it remains in place, but now you actually have a relationship, but not based on the service that you're doing. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you have a bunch of people in the kitchen cooking for the Sunday feast, right? That still does happen, right? Okay, I just don't want to be too archaic here in my examples. Right? So now, you know, one is frying puris or something, one's cooking halava, and one's cooking sweet rice, okay? Like that. Notice I mentioned those salties, because that has happened. Everyone got, you know, nine cooks sat down, hey, yeah, we'll cook this and this and this, and they were, yeah, they all went and cooked. And when it was finished, they offered to the deity, and they sat down and looked at it. There was one salty preparation, I think pakoras, and everything else was sweet. What happened? Like that. Or maybe it was rice. It may have been rice or something. So,
out comes the popcorn and dolls.
Yeah, yes. So then now they're doing these different situations, but what's their relationship based on? I'm sweet rice and you're halva, you know? Yeah, but what's the common element between them is what?
Service,
okay, but what's the medium?
Cooking. Yeah.
Right? In other words, so, and here there's cooking, but it's not that they are that station of cooking that they're doing. But that's their duty, so they take that. But it's not that you become the sweet rice, you know. You know what I'm saying? So that means they're taking the station. So someone's the husband, someone's the wife, someone's the child. Right? But the point is that's done, but the principle is that service to Krishna. You know, through the medium of family. You understand? So you have a relationship based on the service. That service using that. You know? Your devotees, who are as common point is cooking, and then you have your specific duty. So your devotees, right? You know, and then there's, you know, in the environment of family, and you have your specific duties. Right? So then you actually do have relationships. But if one's not a devotee, technically there's not relationship. Because you think you're the dead matter, and dead matter doesn't have so much of, you know, how you say, relationship with other dead matter. The mode of ignorance is delusion. It results in madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 8. In this verse, the specific application of the word two is very significant. This means that the mode of ignorance is a very particular qualification of the embodied soul. Peculiar. The mode of ignorance is just the opposite of the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, by development of knowledge, one can understand what is what. But the mode of ignorance is just the opposite. Everyone under the spell of the mode of ignorance becomes mad, and a madman cannot understand what is what. Instead of making advancement, one becomes degraded, right? So modern man thinks he's advancement, right? They always use the advancement of civilization. But is it actually more advanced? Right? It's degrading, right? It means the quality of facilities that one could improve one's life, you know, are in certain ways developing in a particular area. But the point is the actual quality of their life itself is not. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty, because of ignorance. Right? Wherever there's goodness, there may be something there. So if there's actual knowledge, they're working on that, then things improve. But if there's not, then it will degrade.
And relationships are very clearly seen to be...
Yeah, relationships are very, you know, so it's very rare. You know, it's like... yeah, you go back a long time ago, it's, you know, you have a village, you know, hundreds of years. Divorce is something you've heard about. I'm saying, you may have heard about it, but yes, you've never seen it. You know, and then you come more close, and maybe there's one, you know, in the village. You know, and then it comes up, there's a few more. And now it's like, you know, somebody who's not, that's like strange. You know? What's wrong with this? You know?
Actually, someone who's married is strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, married, but still being able to cooperate in that, you know, stuff like that. You know.
So, like in China, you know, about devotees, so many devotees that divorced, you know, more than 60%.
That's because you're taking on following the modern culture. See all the benefits. You know, this is what we're talking about.
Because they are devotees, and they know, they have any knowledge. You know,
but what culture are they following?
They try to follow, I mean, national culture.
That's good, but I'm just saying, why would there be divorce then? So that means that, yes. Yeah, because they don't understand how it works. You know what I'm saying? Before, they were motivated to basically cooperate because of material desire. Right? Now, if you get rid of the material desire, what's their motive to cooperate?
Why do you cooperate?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Some of them are
sincere devotees. That's okay. But we're pointing out is you can be as sincere as you like, but if you don't know how to cook, how is the halva going to turn out?
Dry.
Okay. Any other qualities? Burnt? I would say halfway between overcooked and not cooked.
That's well done.
Maybe. And then there's always the element of you don't know what's what. So you might have put, you know, salt or baking soda into it.
Yeah, salt.
You know what I'm saying? In other words, they don't know the science. But before, if they're following, see, it's like this. If anything's working, then it would be their material drive that they want something out of it, so they're willing to cooperate. And two, they may have been basing it on some, whatever's left of the culture after the Cultural Revolution. Right? And so because of that, then it's working together. But now they're devotees. Right? So as devotees, you don't want to do anything that you did before. Because before you were, you know, not a devotee, you know, some variety of faith, right? And so then, and you had a lifestyle, so you change your faith, of course you change the lifestyle, right? So now as Vaishnav, what is their culture? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're trying to do service.
They're doing service, but service is, okay, you're doing the service, but then what is the culture of living in their house and dealing with their stuff and dealing with each other? Where is that coming from? That's the problem.
I think it's mixed.
Mixed, but it's but the mix ends up in, you know, signing little stacks of paper. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is it, you know, would it be considered an element of, you know, Chinese culture that you have a duty to perform, and by performing work you'll get results? Okay. So do they maintain that as a devotee? Because if you have a duty as a husband or a wife, why wouldn't that be performed? You know what I'm saying? So, in being a devotee, they've given up what actually is useful in the Chinese culture, which is just remnants left over from the Vedic culture. And so now then they'll get, because if you remove all that, what do you get? If you remove all vestiges of culture, what do you end up with?
No culture.
American. No culture.
American culture.
Then you get Western culture. You understand? That's the problem. Because then what is it? Then what is the Western culture based on? Like why are you good?
Niti.
Yeah, it's niti. It's not because you're supposed to be, or because religion dictates it, or other things. Individuals may say like that, but as a community, you know what I'm saying? Because it's secular, so your own personal thing can't come over. It's because that's what makes things work with other people. I can't have a good economic situation which everybody has equal opportunity to exploit the material energy for their own benefit unless I have these particular good qualities in place. You know what I'm saying? So where is the culture of person to person? It's simply economics. So is economics enough to generate all aspects of, you know, necessary human element? No. Because so what have they dropped? They dropped dharma, whatever little bit is there. Okay, husband has duties, wife has duties, children has duties, teachers have duties. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the problem. It's the same, but it's a common mistake. Means it's the same mistake of the Christians. Right? The point is Christians, because the blend between the culture and your faith is interconnected, at least traditionally in all cultures of the world. That when you become Christian, attains your faith, that means whatever activity you're doing, it's actually connected to your previous faith. So what do you have to do to be faithful? Get rid of all the culture. You understand? But because if you get rid of all culture, because culture is there so that people interact properly, then it won't work. So therefore you have to bring back so-called culture based on simply that it will make socially everybody able to work together. You understand? So you've taken out the culture, then it's going to be, you're either faithful or only into yourself. Right? And so then you have to wait for, with time, if it works, then people will come up to the point of being cooperative with each other. You know, going from anamoy to pranamoy. That's all. So this is the difficulty. You understand? So this is what we're talking about, is that they don't understand the science. It's not that you have to give up whatever is useful and works. What you have, one has to give up is the idea that it's separate from Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like this. Okay. Let's take a practical scenario. Okay. The husband is not a devotee. Okay. The wife is a devotee. Okay. The husband's a Buddhist. Right. And, you know, so was the wife before joining. And so they have an altar of Buddha. But now she's a devotee, so she has an altar of Krishna. Now, how would this work? What would make this work? What would make this not work? You understand?
Yeah, if we have some common idea.
Okay, common. But the common thing is you're worshipping the Lord. Right? The husband doesn't understand Krishna is Buddha. But the wife understands Buddha is. So, will the wife have any problem worshipping the Buddha deity in the home that she's been worshipping for the last, 10 years anyway? No. And as long as that goes on, then there's a chance that the husband won't bother the wife for worshipping her Krishna deity. Yeah? Especially if you just explain it's another incarnation. And generally, Buddhists are pretty cool on incarnation. You know what I'm saying? So, on that level, would there be a problem? Okay. But now, is that what the devotees are doing?
No, they refuse to worship.
So then that's where the problem comes. And that's where they're not the ones the devotee wants not. Now, if they're both devotees, then really you don't have any problem.
Yeah, actually the problems mostly happen on those devotees.
Yeah. Why? Why will it happen on both devotees and not where one's a devotee and one's not, based on what we were just discussing before?
Because the previous one would keep some remains.
That's right, because the other spouse will maintain the Asian culture. But the one who's become a devotee will see that Asian culture as Chinese, as Buddhist, as atheistic, and give it up. Right? But now when they both do that, then what's left? What's the basis? Right? Then that's where the problem comes in. You have to know the science.
Like many girls, the wife, they divorce with Chinese husband, then marry with a Westerner, devotee, it happened like that.
What the point is that's a detail. The point is if you understand the principle, it'll work. Because if you don't understand the principle, it still won't work. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Let us say you don't know how to cook, right? And I give you the ingredients for the halwa, right? And you make a mess out of it. So then we go, oh, the problem is because it was the halwa. Now if I give you the sabji, then it won't be a problem. Does it change? No, you still don't know how to cook. But it appears because you're just starting all over again. So everyone goes, oh, this is great. Come back after 10 years. You know what I'm saying? Same thing. Yes?
Before my husband got married, he told him that if he cares to be married 40 years, he said, you can take the principle of what they're doing, you may not take the detail, you might not go and buy something from McDonald's before you're watching in the middle of the night. But that principle of
yeah. If it's working, that's because it's in line with the actual thing. The reflection is in line with what's the original. So it can be taken. That's the meaning of saragraha. You can take the essence. So it's not a problem. So did he take that advice? That's another discussion. Okay. Okay. So verse 9 summarizes verses 6 to 8. Goodness conditions one to happiness, passion the fruit of action, and ignorance covers one's knowledge and binds one to madness. So this gives the essence so that you know exactly what it is. So goodness generates happiness, passion, fruit of action, and then ignorance, madness.
When Arjuna was on the battlefield fighting, was he utilizing passion? It
means the point is that's you have how the situation works, but then there's your consciousness. Right? So it means the situation, that's a battle, so there's definitely going to be a little bit of passion there, right? Kshatriyas are the mode of passion, so their environment of that is passion. But he's working with it with knowledge. Right, just like Arjuna's out there with the bows and arrows and using the astras and that. Where did that come from? Where's that knowledge from? He got it in Marvel magazine.
From the Vedas.
Okay, from the Vedas means from description, right? So it's knowledge. So he's using the mode of goodness there. Mm. Now, what about those guys, you know, dressed in animal skins that are running onto the battlefield, you know, with huge rocks held over their heads, you know, and they're running at Satyaki. And he's so shocked that, why would anybody ever do that? You know, I'm sitting here with ostras, and they're running at me with rocks. Right? So what are they using? Right? Ignorance, passion here. You know? Now, then you have the thing is, now what's your consciousness? Right? So what mode is that in? Yeah. It should be pure goodness. Yeah, it should be for the Lord. It should be, you know, understand the transcendental element. Right?
So is that a problem? I mean, is that a problem of the modern management techniques where everyone's trying to squeeze everyone into like a specific box only too passionate for the
Yeah, doing? It just makes it very easy. Too passionate, but what does that mean, too passionate? Hmm. Too passionate, what's the problem? That the person is willing to be active, is that the problem? The temple president has so much problem because everybody in his zone is just so active in that. He just, you know, what do you do with all this this energy, right? That's the problem? No. So he's saying you're too active. You're too passionate. So passion is there. So or it's too much desire, right? So he wants that result and everything for himself and all that. Is that the problem? No. So the problem is not that he's active. And not that he's trying to get a result, right? And not that he wants the result for himself. So what's the problem?
Dealing
with others and all that. So
impatient,
right? So in other words, the skills and qualities required to do his service properly, that's what's missing.
So there's training.
Yes, so his training's weak, so therefore, and the temple is a place of training, so who where does the buck end?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Versus, so that means the president's supposed to explain to him how to do that, not just say, oh, you know, you're too passionate, get it together. So that's, you know, that's like the, you know, the Buddhist monk, you know, telling you some, you know, how you say, riddle like that, and then you got to work it out. You know? And then he gets the claim he's your guru, you know, like that. You know, so. Verses 10 to 13. Describe how the effects of increasing modes manifest. Of the increasing modes manifest. When goodness becomes prominent, all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. So the point is knowledge, but now you can see it through the gates become illuminated. Right? Does that mean he walks around and there's light shining out of his ears and nose? He opens his mouth, it's like... Can you put your hand in front of your mouth or something? That's why in the Vedic thing, that thing is, you know, we say it's the culture of humility, but it was the point is that so much light's coming out of your mouth that, you know, it just blinds others, so therefore you bang. And keep down so that if it does, it kind of goes off this way. So, right? Isn't that what they're talking about here? Right? So illuminated means that it's connected to the Lord. You see it in knowledge. How you deal with the gates is according to the Shastra. You know, in proper activities. Right? When passion dominates, great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor and uncontrollable desires and hankering develop. So is that the problem, right, temple president? Great attachments there. Fruit of activity is there, intense endeavor is there, uncontrollable desires and hankering. No. All it is that they don't quite know how to apply what they want to do to the situation. So it's a matter of knowledge. So it's actually ignorance. This is how you can tell. Great attachments there, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, uncontrollable desires. That's how you can tell the symptom that is passion. Right? When ignorance dominates, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are mad. So, you know, the mood goes. You know, they don't want to do anything. They're, you know, completely how you say it. Their perspectives on things are wrong, like that.
When it has talking about the passion here, I've heard once in a lecture that you should have passion on a short leash
on a horse.
Yeah.
Because otherwise if it becomes, just it dominates.
But anything, even goodness has to be, you have to control them all because they're modes of nature. Right? Devotional service, that's another thing. That's unlimited. But these others, due to their limitations, then if they become prominent, then it's a problem. Point is you're using these elements, but it doesn't. But you can't be controlled. And what's the problem? Are the modes of nature the problem, or being controlled by the modes the problem? You understand? The modes of nature is what makes everything work. You take a potato, right? And you have your knife, right? Now you cut the potato. So what modes are at work? Passion. Okay, something's getting done. But what's happening to the form of the potato? It's being destroyed. So ignorance is there. Right? But you're following, you know, direction of authority and all that to do this. So goodness. You have knowledge how to cut the potato, right? You cut the potato, not your fingers, right? So, right? So goodness is there. So all these are working to get everything done. But you're doing it to please Krishna. So therefore, then the bhakti shakti is there. So you're, by engaging those modes, going to get the benefit of devotional service. But everything gets done because of the modes are just the mechanics of how things work. But you don't think like that. Understand? But because we don't think like that and we're conditioned by the modes, then we learn to think like that, so we separate it. So we lose that interest, we lose that focus, right? Because we were saying before, is if you focus on something, you lose the experience. Right? So the point is you focus on the mechanics of it, how it's there, and then on the spiritual world. You first, because you take that mechanics, you then transfer it, but ultimately then you're just absorbed in the Lord and His pastimes. You're not worried, well, this is Sandini, this is Ladini, you know. Because that will reduce the rasa. So it's used as a technique to disengage from the material and connect to the spiritual. Does that make sense? So that's why the knowledge is superior, but it's not the most superior thing. So you get proud of that. It's a technique. It's used. So it's just like, you know, why will you get proud?
It's for a certain level of consciousness. Could you say?
Well, it has its place in the process. Yeah. But you have to know is it has its place, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, if you walk into the kitchen, there's, you know, 50 different kinds of knives and this and that, and you know, the guy talks about it, and he goes, oh, wow, what's the recipe? Well, you know, you take the potato and you cut it like this and like that. Yeah, but what spices like that? You know, no, but, you know, it's just, you know, it's like, what's wrong with this guy? You know, he's overly attached to his knives. It's only part of the cooking process.
We hear many times that the devotees have the goodness to...
It means you have to get the goodness, but that means is, what does that mean? By this definition, what does it mean getting to goodness? There was one word.
Having knowledge.
Knowledge. So you have knowledge of what you're doing, that's goodness. That will then manifest in the activity. You say, oh, because he's clean, this, but why would he be clean? Because he has knowledge. Like that. So that's the point. It's not a separate endeavor. It's part of our process. Yes?
I have not read something I was reading yesterday that I can't remember where it's from, because it didn't come, but that word of goodness leads to dharma, which elevates you to spiritual consciousness. And this in relation to the question about divorce and things like that. The point about knowledge is that connecting that together is by acting in the way of goodness and cultivating knowledge, we will act in a way that is dharmic.
Yes.
Which is obviously marriage is a big part of that.
Okay.
And then that's elevating because we're following what Krishna wants us to do.
Yes. Right. No, you understand? So it means through knowledge, then you'll act according to what your position, because knowledge, you know who you are and what the field is, so you'll act in your according position. So that's dharma. And then, but then more than that, the next step, you know, cause, so that will improve the quality of life. right? Because as I said, motive goodness will improve the quality of life. But you're seeing is that, those qualities and that endeavor and all that is actually working because of its connection to Krishna. Right? So then it takes it to the transcendental platform. So then one gets liberated by that knowledge. Then you see is that pleasing Krishna is the actual ultimate goal of all endeavors. So then it takes on the devotional. Right? So in the proper understanding, dharma and sad-dharma are, you know, for us they're non-different. Because the activity is done because it pleases Krishna. Sad-dharma, eternal. You know, Sanatan Dharma. So Sanatan Dharma then is the eternal Dharma of the living entity. So the point is but you're using the mechanics of Dharma that's here. But the Dharma that's here is given by Krishna because that's the natural reflection of the spiritual world, the essential points. In the way of form in that. Right? But that form is to try to develop that mentality. Right? Just like you were saying before. You put the person in a situation of goodness, there's a chance he'll develop that. Like we were saying before. So the Taoists, they figured out the situations that develop that understanding. And they put people in there and encourage them to look for it. And if they find it, then great. If they don't find it, then they don't know, there's nothing for them to do. Right? Does that make sense? But Vaishnavas know the thing, so you can explain that. But you still have to put yourself in the situation. So it means if you can come to that consciousness without, then you've situated yourself in the spiritual platform. So then naturally you'll follow that anyway, because that's the spiritual culture. But if not, then you're going to be in that, and the idea is that from that you'll develop these qualities. All right? Does that make sense? So like that. But always the qualities go in pair. That's the thing. The two go together. So that's the point.
That means we employ the moves for Krishna's service.
Well, the modes are all you have to work with. So you're just going to employ what you have. Right? Practical is using what you have. Right? So you're dealing with material energy that's controlled by the modes, so you connect that to Krishna. You understand? You're not under the modes, but you're using the modes. Because you don't do the work anyway. The material energy does it. And the material energy works with the modes. So therefore, the modes are at work. But you're not affected by them because you don't identify with them.
But I have to imply that I was in certain kind of...
You have to employ them, but the point is what is that meaning, employing? Because here you're using the term modes in a negative connotation that it's a bad thing, but that's all there is. You have another alternative. Right? You're going to perform the activity as the operational cause. Material nature is going to respond as a material cause. So she's going to transform. What are you going to transform through? With? What's mechanics? Modes. Right? But you're only an instrument. So the instrument is not disturbed. Right? Why? Because it's not theirs. Right? If you burn the sabji, and the spoon claims that it cooked the sabji, who's at fault? The spoon. But now, if somebody else is cooking the sabji and the spoon's assisting, if something goes wrong, who's at fault?
Someone.
The person. Yeah, someone. Someone's in trouble.
Get someone.
Yes. Does that make sense? So that's the point. We're always an instrument. So that's why you have to learn. We're an instrument. So it's a matter of whether it's being mechanically carried out by the modes or by the Satchitananda, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Does it really matter? What matters here? What can you do? Like, because you don't control material energy, you don't control spiritual energy. So what can you do?
Connected to Krishna.
Yes, connected to Krishna. Means you see it. It's already connected. Just you see it. So if you change your consciousness and willingly take part in connection to Krishna, then it all becomes perfect. Okay?
So what do we do just to change our consciousness?
It's called
Bhagavad Gita.
Read it, find out. Okay? Or go to Bhagavad Gita and get the lectures starting with the introduction. Listen to them, and when you get to this point, then.
Right down the street.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaur Prabhupada ki